From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
Welcome to School Talks. This week on the program, we're going to continue our focus on workforce development. Joining us will be the Honorable Kelly Ann Ramsey from Michigan's Third Circuit Court and also co-founder of We Care Foster Care. We'll also be joined by Alexis Ramsey, who is the CEO and Executive Director of We Care Foster Care. In the Workforce Development Pipeline, we'll chat with Jennifer Wyatt, Senior Outreach Specialist from Macomb County, and Betsy Mock, the Apprenticeship Program Wall Coordinator for Conduits to the Trades. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is the Honorable Kelly Ann Ramsey, a judge at Michigan's Third Circuit Court. Welcome to the program, Your Honor.
Thank you so kindly for having me.
I appreciate you taking time joining us. In my research on you and your history, I was fascinated by the group or the organization that you founded, We Care Foster Care, especially its mission, its purpose, and that. And I'm hoping you could share with us and our School Talks listeners sort of the story behind the founding and your involvement with it.
Certainly. My first 23 years on the bench at the Third Circuit Court, I served in the juvenile division, which are cases brought to us in part by the Department of Health and Human Services concerning abused and neglected children. And then, of course, it handles the delinquency docket of children 16 and younger who are brought before the court because of alleged misconduct. It was during my tenure as the chief referee under the Honorable presiding judge, Mary Beth Kelly, who was also the chief judge of the circuit court at the time, and she started a task force. And she was interested in bringing in law firms to provide pro bono specialized legal services for children. And I had a subgroup, and I was thinking about what she needed to do to provide services to children. But I had been on the bench a long time by then, and I had handled thousands of cases. And in summary, our children who are brought before the court needed more than legal services. So she sent us off with this task of providing suggestions to her and to how to make the system better. And I knew that we needed more than just legal services, so I was pondering my life. What made me who I am today? Was it dance lessons, swimming lessons, braces? I certainly had parents who made certain that I knew that I was worth it. But between the first meeting and the second meeting, I took it upon myself to ask a few questions to a few friends, and I had my answer. People wanted to help. People want to give back. They want to enrich our children. So I asked my friend, Dr. Maria Pinzon, who's an orthodontist, and I didn't even finish the sentence with her. And before I got done, Kelly, sure, one child, one set of braces per year. I asked my ophthalmologist the same question. No problem. An exam. Set of glasses that the child picks out and enjoys wearing. And it kind of evolved from there. So at the next meeting, I presented my idea that there are people out there in the world who want to give back if they only knew how. And that's what birthed the idea of this foundation. I got the green light from then Chief Judge Mary Beth Kelly. I got the endorsement of the Third Circuit Court, which gave us the credentials to proceed. And then we served at that time as a clearinghouse to match individuals who have skills and talents and merchandise with those families that needed it.
And you know, with such an honorable mission that you have, what do you find are some of the unique challenges that children in foster care face that you hope to address with this group?
Well, that's kind of a sad question, because by the time the Department of Health and Human Services needs to petition the court for court involvement, we see many children who have lived in chaos. They've lived in chaos. They've lived without structure. I truly believe that every child deserves to live in a safe, suitable, loving, nurturing, drug-free, crime-free home environment. And we first have to get the child to the place where they feel trusted with us, trusted in their foster home, and amenable to receiving the services that we want to offer. And then there's the logistics problem of how do you get Jasmine, our first recipient of braces, to the orthodontist office. And of course, that has a list of problems as well. But slowly but surely, we've worked through that. And we provided that clearinghouse and worked out those details.
Mm-hmm. We're currently chatting with the Honorable Kellyanne Ramsey from the Michigan Third Circuit Court, who is also one of the co-founders of We Care Foster Care. Judge, let me ask you, can you describe beyond an optometrist or someone orthodontist, what kinds of community-connected resources and opportunities do you provide for children sort of outside that medical focus?
Well, you have to realize that the goal of the Wayne County Juvenile Justice System is to provide reunification of families. So the Department of Health and Human Services puts forward a parent agency treatment plan and service agreement, goals that the parents have to accomplish to get the children to return to their care and custody. But we're also returning the child to a home, which means maybe the roof needs repairing, maybe the front steps need repairing, the electricity, the plumbers. We're not talking about just braces and eyeglasses. We're also talking about services that those families couldn't provide that may have resulted in the removal of the children because some of the home situations were unfit. So we're also asking perhaps unions to step forward and provide that care. And once again, you know, every one of us has a talent, an ability. Perhaps you would be willing to come and tutor a child. Perhaps you're a salon and maybe you would provide a manicure and a hairdo for graduation day or prom day. Maybe I should clean out my closet and get rid of a few fancy dresses because they'd be appropriate for a business meeting for a child, a job mm-hmm. interview, maybe a prom dress. So we can incorporate everything, for lack of better words, because when you have nothing, even the littlest object can make a meaningful mm-hmm. difference in someone's life.
You know, the way you characterize the needs they have makes you appreciate what we take for granted.
I think that's true.
And in light of that, I think it's easy to see the impact you can make in those circles. But talk a little bit about some of the things that improve in their lives that you might not see right in front of your eyes.
Well, I'd like to share with you a story of the first recipient of braces, Jasmine. And when I first met her, she had been brought to the court system twice. Her biological parents' parental rights had been terminated because of our inability to reunite them. Then she was adopted, single-parent adoption. That did not work. She was harmed in that home as well. And when I met her, she was in residential care, 12 years old. She did not engage in anything. She wouldn't go to school. She wouldn't see her therapist. She habitually sucked her thumb to the point where my friend, Maria Pinzon, continues to scold me. How in the world did this child eat? How in the world didn't we provide the braces? Past that story, let's get back to Jasmine. Jasmine was the first recipient of braces. She now has a pretty smile and straight teeth. But I don't believe that Jasmine's receipt of the braces is what changed Jasmine's outlook on life. It was the fact that she met a stranger, and a stranger made her a promise. And that stranger kept the promise. And then Jasmine, throughout the couple years that she had braces, needed to be manipulated monthly, every other month. And she got to develop a relationship with Dr. Pinzon. And her trust in humanity changed. Her outlook on how she thought changed. And I'm proud to tell you that from the little girl who sat in the corner and wouldn't leave her room in residential care, I'm proud to tell you, teared up here, that I attended her college graduation.
Wow.
She has a master's degree as well. Her story is about her childhood, and there's a little bit of me in it. But to go from that level of trauma in her life, that level of neglect, it isn't the straight teeth.
Right.
It's her confidence in humanity that has changed. And I think that I'm trying to answer your question, that it's more than the set of furniture that we might provide, the new kitchen table and chairs. We all have experiences in our childhood that made a difference to us. Mm-hmm. Something a neighbor said, something a coach said, something a teacher said. But the love that she felt and received from Dr. Pinzon was more than the braces. It was recognition that Jasmine is worth it. And I think many of our children come to us with, sadly, living in an environment where they don't see that they're worth it. They haven't been told that you have more talent and ability than you possibly can imagine. They don't live in an environment where my parents said to me that with hard work and determination, I can achieve the seemingly impossible. It's hard to recognize that when you're struggling to survive.
The Honorable Kellyanne Ramsey, thank you so much for joining us on School Talks today. Such a noble effort above and beyond serving the circuit court as you do. I sincerely appreciate your time today, and probably goes without saying, but keep up the great work.
Well, thank you so kindly for having me, and thank you for the exposure to We Care Foster Care. Trust me when I tell you our children need help.
So coming up after the break, after a word from our sponsors, we'll chat with Alexis Ramsey, who might just be related to the Honorable Kellyanne Ramsey, and her work with the We Care Foster Care. But for now, this is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins & Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is the Chief Executive Officer and Executive Director for We Care Foster Care, Alexis Ramsey. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So prior to the break, we were chatting with your mother about her role in founding the Foster Care Network. And in your current role as Chief Executive Officer, how do you see the lessons you've learned over time? How have they shaped your approach to continuing to support youth in the foster care system?
Well, it all comes down to relationships. You can't learn from somebody who you don't like. And relationships are built on trust. And trust is something that's really difficult for kids in foster care. When your parents have let you down, your family's let you down, the system has let you down, school has let you down, trust is a valuable commodity. So we take the time to really get to know the kids, talk to the kids, spend time with the kids, and build trust with the kids. It's about sustained care, showing up day after day, and putting pathways in front of them to opportunity to find their greatness.
Sure. And, you know, in reading about your organization, one thing that struck me is how you had characterized that the children you work with, they're sort of accustomed to living in chaos. Mm-hmm. So when something comes to them that is seemingly stable and reliable, it's often suspect initially, right?
Absolutely.
In terms of trust. And I found that to be interesting. Your new partnerships, I understand you have partnerships with Ideas to Action, Interplay Learning, and some others. How do these collaborations help the students in foster care? And more importantly, how did they come about to be part of your mission?
Well, they actually came about through conversations with kids. Hmm. I've taught thousands and thousands of kids, and a common question is, what do you want to be when you grow up? And when you ask that to a kid in foster care, you often get a blank stare. Mm-hmm. Because no one's asked them that question before. They're thinking about where they're going to sleep at night, where their next meal is going to be. They're not thinking about their future. And sadly, they've often been told that they're not worth it, that they're bad kids, that they're never going to be anybody. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get an even sadder answer. One of the kids responded, well, I'm a recovering prostitute. I really don't know what my career is going to be. So we looked for organizations that had similar missions to ours, who wanted to put education, workforce development, and homeownership at the forefront for kids, because we believe that those three things will break the foster care to prison pipeline.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, education being a sort of a cornerstone of what you're trying to do, can you share how your focus on housing and workforce development now sort of complements these educational outcomes?
Well, as a teacher myself, you know, I've always viewed education as the silver bullet for rising out of generational poverty. However, it's hard to focus on linear equations when you're thinking about when you're going to get your next meal,
sure.
Right? So we really believe that education, workforce development, and housing are the three pillars upon which someone can build a stable life.
Mm-hmm. You know, and we spoke before about some of the things that we take for granted. Mm. All of those we take for granted on a daily basis. And, you know, I think you may be aware there was a study done earlier this year that showed in Michigan there's approximately 44% of all school children who are living below a livable standard. Now, it might not be poverty, but it's below a livable standard, such as maybe no access to transportation or not food on the table regularly and whatnot. And when I think about that larger group of people compared to what you're dealing with, it makes me appreciate the conversation that needs to be had when people are critical of education for how much money we spend on it, when in fact, if you look at the population we're serving, the challenges are enormous. And I think your example of linear equations made me appreciate that, because that seems so far and so abstract from someone who's hungry and or worried about whether or not they're going to be safe tonight. Just something that basic, right?
We need to make it relevant.
Exactly, so much. So on the creative front, I do know some of your programs like Snap Circuits, and I think you're doing something with Legos, how that helps even children in this situation, how that helps them spark curiosity in what might be ahead of them. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, first of all, the materials that we use, they're expensive. So it shows the kids, again, it's that relationship and it's building trust. So it shows the kids that we believe in them, that they're important enough to have access to these materials. It establishes trust. So we start right at the beginning of, let's take everything out of the box and let's put it all back in,
yeah.
Right? Because this material is going to be used by other kids. So we need to have all the pieces go back together again. They're relatable to things that they use in the real world. So when mm-hmm. they're doing Snap Circuits, they're learning about, like, well, how does a light bulb work? And how does a switch work? And they've been in situations where sometimes that switch didn't work. And they didn't have the money and their families didn't have the money to pay for the electrician to come and fix it.
Yeah.
So it was relatable and something that we can easily connect to education. We have steps and certifications that they get as they work through Snap Circuits. Then they move on to Lego Robotics. Mm-hmm. They get to use technology in a meaningful way. It's not just about social media and, playing video games. It's actually using it to better their education and their knowledge. And then they move on to the interplay learning.
We're with Alexis Ramsey from We Care Foster Care. Alexis, let me follow up on, in education, there is a term used often called aging out. Depending on how old you are, certain services may no longer be available. And in your system, how We Care Foster Care ensures that regardless of age, I understand that no participant ages out like in so many other sectors of our education or other healthcare systems. How does that work and how do you maintain that safety net?
Well, once you become part of the We Care family, you never age out of our family.
So looking ahead, what measurable impact do you as the executive director hope to see, say, over the next 5 years in terms of educational and workforce development opportunities and pathways for the children you serve? What is your sort of your vision for the future?
We are building a self-sustainable matrix that has domains like housing, employment, food security, education, mobility, transportation. So we want to check in with our kids quarterly to see how they're moving through that matrix. One being, so take transportation for example. One would be they have no access to transportation. There's no public transportation near them. Maybe they've got a car, but it doesn't work. Versus a five is they have a car, they have money for gas, it's fully insured, and they can use that vehicle to get to and from school, work, or wherever they need to go.
You know, the matrix is a great idea because it lets you compartmentalize and measure whether certain things are doing better than others.
Absolutely.
And I think longitudinally that will be really helpful for you. One last question, Alexis. If someone wanted to step forward and help the organization, how do they go about it?
Well, all they have to do is visit our website, which is www.wecarefostercare.org. And there's a lot of options where you can show how you care.
So Alexis Ramsey, the CEO, Executive Director of We Care Foster Care, some noble work you're doing here. And I sincerely appreciate the time joining us on School Talks, because the very children you serve, we also serve in our schools. So keep up the great work, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you kindly.
After a word from our sponsors, we'll chat with Jennifer Wiott from Macomb County, fueling the talent pipeline. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Jennifer Wiott, the Senior Outreach Specialist from Macomb County. Welcome to the program, Jennifer.
Thank you so much.
So I hear the word senior outreach in Macomb County. What does all of this mean as it relates to the kind of work that you do?
Well, I am out there talking, networking about an initiative in Macomb County called Fueling the Talent Pipeline. The purpose of Fueling the Talent Pipeline is to connect industry in and around Macomb County to the school districts and expose the kids to the different types of careers that are out there and what it takes to get those careers. Mm-hmm. So it has a twofold goal. One is to have these kids graduate from high school with a better plan as to what they want to do next and how to get there. But at the same time, the goal is to fuel the workforce pipeline for the employers that are participating in this initiative. So I'm out there networking all the time, and you know, you'll notice I love to talk. So it fits perfectly.
How does your role in this outreach specialist contribute to actually connecting local talent with an actual employment opportunity? Could you walk us through an example of one?
Typically, the way that the process works is I work for planning and economic development. So we'll have an economic developer that is meeting with a business that is either moving to the county or just needs something from the county, and they will say, well, how's your workforce? And of course, right now, everybody is saying, what workforce? Where is everybody? And they say, well, you know, one way to solve that problem is to look at this Fueling the Talent Pipeline. It's a long-term goal, but this could be something that you might want to consider. So if they mention, yes, let me get information, they will then connect that business to me. I will meet with them, discuss the initiative and all the various ways that they can participate and what is in it for them. Everybody's running so lean right now with employees. How am I going to make this work?
So if I'm in the pipeline right now, what industries or sectors are, I guess we would say, your primary focus to help develop talent in Macomb County?
Well, in Macomb County, manufacturing is definitely number one. I mean, that is the bread and butter of Macomb County. That is the main focus. In fact, Fueling the Talent Pipeline started pre-COVID. And at that time, it was strictly geared towards manufacturing because the industry came to the county and said, we're dying. All our employees are getting ready to retire, and we don't have anybody available to take their place. So that's where it started. And then, of course, COVID happened. Everything got put on a shelf until 2022 when I came in. And at that point, you know, life in general had changed. So now it's not only manufacturing. The medical field is crying. I mean, they're at a critical point with their staffing needs, anything in finance, anything in accounting, IT. So really it's been opened up to pretty much all the industries, but I would say manufacturing, engineering as primary, medical as secondary.
And within, you know, manufacturing is a pretty broad term. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it from a lens years ago, you may have this, I'm making things with my hands and so on, but it's so much more advanced now.
Yeah.
Can you shed some light on some of the, I guess, the subdivisions of manufacturing, like robotics? I understand aerospace and
aerospace
that.
And defense.
Tell us a little bit about some of those industries in the county.
Well, when I talk manufacturing, it is so broad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, you know, they still have this vision of manufacturing being dark, dirty, dangerous, mm-hmm. the 3Ds. And with all of the new technology, it's not like that at all. Mm-hmm. So I've gone into some plants where I would eat off their floor. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing. But you've got robotics now, mechatronics, automation. And a lot of people talk about, well, isn't automation going to take away those manufacturing jobs? Some of them. But with that automation comes new jobs,
mm-hmm.
and they need people to know how to do those jobs. And right now, with the new technology, all of the old people that are in manufacturing don't know how to do it. So they need the new blood to keep up.
We're currently chatting with Jennifer Wiatt, the senior outreach specialist from Macomb County, who is responsible for fueling the talent pipeline. And I imagine in your line of work right now, there's probably some challenges you face. Your example of the employer who wants or is considering coming to the county. What are some of the challenges in aligning the workforce with what the employers need? What are some roadblocks to
there
that?
There's some roadblocks. Yeah. Honestly, since I've started doing this, I've never met one business that has said, this is a great plan. This is a great initiative. I need to develop a future workforce. The issue is, in my opinion, they're running so lean that it sounds great, but the next step in the process is to fill out an enrollment form that says, this is, yes, we want to participate. These are the ways we can participate, whether it be industry tours, job shadows, work-based learning, or what most people know of as the co-op mm-hmm. process. There's just so many things that employers can do, but I think when they sit down and go, okay, can we do this? They have to put forth the effort mm-hmm. to make these things happen. And I will tell you, when they do that, it pays off.
I understand there's a really successful example of this with Romeo Schools.
Yes.
And tell us a bit about that.
So Romeo is one of two school districts in the county called Ford Next Generation Learning. So very unique, impressive type of program. It's based around academies. So one day I was walking through a manufacturing plant in Romeo with, I believe he was the operations manager, and he was talking to me about how he's hired so many Romeo graduates. And I said, so you're involved with the schools? And he says, well, yeah. He goes, we've done industry tours, we've done job shadows, we've gone into the school and done presentations. We have a couple right now that are doing co-ops with us. And as we come around the corner, here's a kid standing there with a baseball cap on with the Romeo Bulldog. And so it was getting close to an event that is part of Fueling the Talent Pipeline. It's called Manufacturing Day. National event. Macomb County has been involved in it for the past 12 years. And I'm going to toot the horn for a minute. We're the largest participant in the nation. This kid was standing there with the baseball cap, so I'm not afraid. I just went up and introduced myself, asked him how he got in. And it was just as I had mentioned, job shadow, work-based learning. And I said, have you ever heard of an event called Manufacturing Day? And this kid just happened to have two t-shirts on. He pulled one t-shirt up, and underneath was a Manufacturing Day t-shirt from a few years back. And that was just a perfect story for me. I loved it.
Great story. Jennifer Wiatt, the senior outreach specialist from Macomb County, who is fueling the talent pipeline. Of all the things we talk about on School Talks, this is arguably one of the most important because of the need to connect jobs with education. Mm-hmm. If someone wanted more information about the program and the kind of work you do, how do they go about it?
They can actually reach out to me through email. It's jennifer.weot, W-E-O-T, at macomb.gov.org, or they can call 586-524-2987.
It was great to have you on the program today, Jennifer. Keep up the great work in Macomb County, and we'll continue to stay in touch.
Thank you so much.
After a short break, we'll chat with Betsy Mock from Conduit to the Trades. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Betsy Mock, the founder and CEO of Conduit to the Trades. Welcome to the program, Betsy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Your experience in this profession is closely connected to the work from one of our core sponsors, Musk Construction Careers. Mm-hmm. And I've learned so much from them interviewing different guests, many of whom provide wonderful apprenticeship opportunities and so on. And given you're the co-founder of this organization, what inspired you to create the whole Building Trades Tour series? And how do you think it impacts career awareness for students?
Well, everything that I do, I first and foremost say that my most important job that I've ever had in my entire life has been being a mother. And I have three children, and all three of my kids inspire me for what I do every single day. I didn't start off where I am now with the Conduit to the Trades and what that does, and I'll get to that in a moment. But I started out with Building Trades Tour Series. My son, who is now 14, diagnosed with ADHD. He was in the public school system in third grade back in, during the pandemic, 9 years old, and very quickly I learned through going virtual that that would not work very well for someone with ADHD. And so I did something that I never thought I would do in my life, and I started to homeschool him the following fall for fourth grade, and we've continued on with that. And that led me to where you can't homeschool on your own. You have to form a network, and there's networks across the country. And so I indulged in finding those networks, and in doing so, I found that there was a lot of parents out there that they were looking to find out how they can get their kids into an apprenticeship, what an apprenticeship entails, and how to apply for them, and so forth. And so I took it upon myself to work with the Michigan Building Trades, and I went and spoke to them and asked if they would work with me to bring in small groups of homeschoolers to the different training centers for the different trades across the state of Michigan. And when we would do that, we would travel to one of the training centers about once a month, and we would find out about their programs there, and they would do a hands-on project and find out more about the different trades that there were. So with that, the Michigan Building Trades was familiar with me, and we kind of built a relationship and went from there. And so that was the beginnings of where I'm at now.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I love about the name of your group is the play on words of conduit. For any of our electrician friends on the program listening today, conduit is obviously what wires run through, and to have it be the title. So what is Conduit to the Trades?
So Conduit to the Trades was born from another influence from my middle daughter. My middle daughter was a senior in high school, and she went to school, and as many educators do, they said to my daughter, what are you going to do after you graduate from high school? And at the time, she said, well, I'm going to go into the trades. And immediately, the teacher responded with saying, that's not a good plan. You need a plan A. You need some college. And we're a very strong union family. And of course, my children being raised in that, they know the value of the trades. They know the value of union trades. And my daughter came home and told me this, that this happened. And I said, wow, I really need to do something about this. They need to know in my hometown the importance of the trades and how viable these careers are. And so with my relationship already formed with the Michigan Building Trades, I went to them and I said, I have a big ask. I'm hoping that I could get as many as are willing to work with me to give me a few $100s to purchase their own sign so that I could put up an apprenticeship wall in my hometown. And I was hoping that I would have at least 9 partners and that I wouldn't have to put any of my own money in to get the wall up. And so when that happened, by the time I got done, because it took me approximately 2 years to put all the partners together and all of their information, and by the time I got done, I had all 15 of the building trades participating and workforce development with their programs Access for All and Michigan Women in Trades participating so that we had a complete wall. So
feels like one of those great Shark Tank stories, right?
Right.
Where you start small and next thing you know.
Right.
How does Conduit to the Trades actually partner with local schools and connect with unions for apprenticeships? And one thing I've learned over time is the whole opportunity to do this debt-free.
Right.
How does that work with Conduit to the Trades?
So with the apprenticeship walls, if they have an apprenticeship wall in the school, they have access to all of those partners and they can connect. We usually have a way of, if they want to hold a career fair, that kind of thing, they will often reach out to these partners and bring them into there. But as far as the apprenticeship wall and getting students to do that, it's really through the student's self-discovery by using that as a resource.
We're currently chatting with Betsy Mock, the CEO and founder of Conduit to the Trades. With regard to the program wall for the
yes.
apprenticeships, what role do hands-on experiences play in terms of students getting motivated and engaged to participate?
Well, I can tell you just from taking my kids around to the homeschoolers around to the building trades tours, a lot of them didn't know what most of these trades do when they're in the field. And just having that one hands-on project really lit them up to the point where a lot of them had started to think about maybe I really do want to do something in the trades. Maybe college is not the path for me.
Away from the obvious skills students acquire using their hands and whatnot, what are some soft skills you see that come out of kids participating in this?
Some soft skills definitely that I see are good communication skills, the ability to explain things to others, being able to take criticism, critical thinking, being punctual, being able to solve problems, and leadership skills.
That is an excellent basket of soft skills. You ask any employer, many times that's what they're looking for, well beyond any particular skill set. Betsy Mock, the founder and CEO of Conduit to the Trades, thank you so much for stopping by School Talks today and giving us a neat perspective on a lot of really good work happening in the state. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That will do it for today's program. A great look at workforce development and helping children. That's all the time we have for today. But remember, there are 2 ways to spell 1 and 3 ways to spell 2. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.